and welcome to a Grad Chat, your opportunity to find out about graduate research here at Queen's. My name is CJ the DJ, and I am your host for this week's Grad Chat. Of course, a show like this could not happen without the support of the School of Graduate Studies and Postdoctoral Affairs, as well as CFRC, so thank you very much to both of them. Now, if your mates missed the show at any time, you can download the podcast the next day on either iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or CFRC Podcast. So no excuse not to hear what our awesome students and postdoctoral fellows are doing. Today, though, I would like to introduce you to Rochelle Audebay, who is doing a combined Bachelor of Science Honours, I'm presuming the H's, and a biomedical and a Master of Science in Biomedical and Molecular Sciences under the supervision of Dr. Myron Suchek. Welcome to Grad Chat, Rochelle.
Good morning. How are you?
I am good. So what is this combined undergrad-grad program that you're doing? How does that work?
So basically, I graduated from my undergrad, so now I'm in my first years of my master, but in my undergrad, I was doing a thesis project, and so that work I was able to take and combine it into my master's, so it would afford me less time for my master's.
So you did some grad programs, as courses as well?
Yes, I
in
did.
In that fourth year?
Yeah, in the fourth year.
Which is brilliant. I mean, yeah. I know there's a few programs that are doing that now to help you reduce the time in doing a master's. And it also sort of helps you, I think, understand what is research all about before yes. you make that big jump.
I agree, 100%. I feel if I didn't have that opportunity in my undergrad, I would be completely lost now. Not to say I'm not, but there's always room for improvement.
Well, you haven't chosen a particularly easy topic or easy field of study because, as we'll get to understand a little bit later, there's a lot of micro work that you're doing, which for us in the general community, we want macro. We want to understand the big picture, not necessarily delving down into that little nitty gritty, which is all super, super important, which is why we find out how to treat certain illnesses that we may have. So how did you find, first of all, be even talking about your work before we do that, how do you even find talking in general about your work? Because you are working at the micro level, not the macro.
In simple terms, a challenge, that's for sure. I mean, when I first started off, it was a challenge for me to even like understand the nitty-gritty of the molecular side of things. But after a while and after some practices, and especially with the courses I was taking in my undergrad, I had a lot of opportunities to present posters or talks.
Right.
And those had to be kind of put in lay terms so that the general audience can understand. Specifically because when you're talking about the molecular side of things, there's just so much and it's so complex that even if somebody's an expert in their field in the molecular side, they won't necessarily understand my project.
Right.
Yeah, so it took a while, but I think what I did is I kind of like took a step back and said, okay, now I know this, but before I knew it, how would I have wanted this to be presented to me? Yeah.
Have you figured that out?
It's still on the way. I'm trying. Hopefully I will now.
It's not easy.
No, it's never easy. Because it's like there's specific names for each component. So, you know, let's say because I'm working with receptors, right? There's a specific name for the paradigm that we're working with for each component and their functions. To truly understand like the depth of the research, you need to truly understand the functions of each component.
Each one.
Yeah. And the general audience usually doesn't or isn't very well versed in the different components. And so it's kind of hard to be like, okay, so this will cause this without like really going into depth as to why
and
this does
cause that.
Where is
there even that connection to get you started in the first place?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So with that, I want to ask a bit more background from you.
Okay.
So you, in your undergrad then, you were able to do this research project. Did you even think going into undergrad that you may even consider doing a master's? And I know you've got an end result of not necessarily staying in research, but did you ever even think of research as a possible
Honestly,
option?
In, I would say, my first year or so, no. I always kind of liked more of the biology and like the medical side of sciences, but I knew that I needed to expand because it's always really important to understand the basis of medicine, right? Because my hopes are to go into MD. But for me to do that, I need to understand how we even like get the information and get the knowledge for us to treat patients.
Right.
And that's why, you know, when I started learning more and more about medicine, I was like, I really want to try out research and see how, you know, I could potentially expand onto the knowledge that we have today.
Because I guess too, I mean, when you go to med school, you're going to find out all this, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yes, you can learn about the 206 bones in your body
yeah.
and all the different muscles and the ligaments. And then, of course, as you go on, more about various illnesses and things. But
exactly.
But that's really nice that you're wanting to go down even low, because not everyone yeah. would do that. You know, how things work. There is, again, what you might learn would be the macro, but
yeah.
how do you dig down? Why does someone have that stomach pain?
Exactly, because every patient is so different. Mm-hmm. And for you to truly be able to treat your patient well and like to their unique needs, you need to really understand the biological basis of mm-hmm. that disease. And a way that I can do that now at my age is going to research, understanding how we figure out, you know, different treatments, or how, you know, different aspects of the research work to kind of help me grow my skill set from the bottom
up. Because there are some students who are doing like the combined
yeah.
master's or PhD with medicine, and they come out being clinical researchers,
yeah,
which is fascinating in itself and a lot of extra work.
Yeah.
But it is nice for them to have both sides of it, understanding both sides, which is great. So I wish you all the best of luck with that.
Thank you so much.
But in the meantime, we should actually talk about what you're actually doing. Now, you are only in your first year, of course.
Yes.
Even though that you've done some coursework in your undergrad, as you mentioned. But you're working on the impact of cannabis on cancer metastasis mediated through epigenetic rewiring. Okay, yes. Well, before we even get an overview of that, can you explain some of these words? Metastasis, epigenetic rewiring, what do those words mean? Just to make sure we all understand where we're going.
Of course. Before I start, I just want to give a really big thank you to my supervisor, Dr. Suchek, and David Bunsick. He was the graduate student who did most of this research.
Ah, right.
Yeah, and so now I'm kind of continuing on his project. But so to start off, cannabinoids are cannabis, and you have endocannabinoid system, which is kind of your natural cannabinoid system. Besides, you know, what we already know of like the cannabinoids that you would inhale or ingest.
Okay.
Your body has a natural endocannabinoid system.
Oh, does it?
Yes,
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
I thought people just smoked weed and that was it.
Yeah. So, you know, when you do smoke, like the cannabinoid particles, they act on they act kind of as agonists to your endocannabinoid receptors. And so the endocannabinoid system is actually super interesting. It's involved in a lot of different developmental processes. And even during fetal progression, it's very, very vital. And there's a lot of research online that shows that, you know, in some cases where there are defects in the endocannabinoid system, there could be a halt in development. So that's super interesting. But to move on to the second term, cancer metastasis is simply just the spread and progression of cancer. So it's when you have cancer and it unfortunately spreads into other sites of the body.
Right.
And then epigenetic rewiring. Epigenetics in themselves are just kind of a mechanism of gene regulation. So how your body regulates what to express, right? So each cell has the same DNA, but each cell has different functions, and those are regulated through epigenetics. So in sum, when I'm saying rewiring, I'm saying that we're trying to see if cannabinoids can cause cancer metastasis or the spread of cancer by rewiring your epigenetics or the expression of your genes to essentially enhance a metastatic phenotype of the cells, or to cause the cancer cells to be more metastatic, which is
more,
again,
more active, really.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah,
more
exactly.
Active. And you don't want that. You want the opposite. You want it to be suppressed.
Yeah, exactly. And there's like, of course, a lot of nitty gritty biological details when I'm saying metastatic phenotypes. But for now, yeah, like that's the simple explanation to it.
And that was just the heading.
Yeah.
And look at what we found out already. So what is the actual purpose of the use of cannabinoids to assist with cancer treatment?
So most of the times, they aren't given as treatment, but they're given as adjunct to chemotherapy. So when patients feel nauseous or if they have pain, a lot of the times they are given cannabinoids. But what we were doing is we were, there's no research up to date that kind of explores the impact of giving cancer patients cannabinoids or, you know, cannabis as part of a treatment. And we were wondering, there is literature about its genomic effects or essentially mutation to the specific DNA.
Right.
But we don't know if it can in any way cause epigenetic rewiring. And so we wanted to see, is it good or is it, you know, going to be harmful to give cancer patients cannabinoids alongside the chemotherapy?
So a lot of people think that, you know, using cannabinoids is, regardless what else it does, it's, if it gives you that comfort, surely it's good to be able to have. Because a lot of people have a lot of pain and they find using cannabinoids can help reduce that pain.
Yeah. So,
but you're saying it's more than that.
Yes. So, and I understand that perspective, right? But this is why we do research. So within our research, we were able to, and I'll get into more detail later on, but we're able to figure out that, you know, different cannabinoids or synthetic cannabinoids can still give you the therapeutic effect of cannabis while ensuring that it doesn't, you know, aggravate cancer metastasis or cause any sort of epigenetic rewiring.
Right.
So yeah, and I'll get more into that later, but there's still research that needs to be done so that we ensure that, you know, patients can still get the therapeutic side of cannabis while they are being, you know, safe. And yeah.
Okay. Well, which is great. So let's go into a bit more into your research.
Okay.
Okay. So can you give us a bit of an overview of what you are specifically trying to do? And I know it is low level or small level, but can you make it a little bit bigger for us?
Yes, of course. This is the hard part, but here we go.
This is the hard part, but I know you can do it.
Yeah, I'm going to try my best. I'll start off with the very, very top of it, right? We're talking about cannabinoids and cannabis. So within your system, cannabinoids can work on a lot of different receptors, but the main two types are cannabinoid type 1 receptors and cannabinoid type 2 receptors. The type 1 are predominantly found in your central nervous system, and the type 2 are found in your peripheral nervous system. And so within the undergraduate project, the one that David Bunsick was completed, he focused on the cannabinoid type 1 and to kind of see the...
So that was the nervous system one.
The central nervous system, yes. And he just wanted to see kind of the different effects that different CB1 cannabinoids can have on your body. And for me, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take that into account and expand on it and look at the cannabinoid type 2. Yeah. And so the important part about this research and really kind of the main point or the main molecular point is trying to understand the mechanism, right, of how they could cause, you know, cancer metastasis. Because we do have research that shows that they do increase the metastatic phenotypes.
Okay. But so you've already got that information.
Yes, we have that information. Right. And we kind of have looked at, you know, the difference. And when I say metastatic phenotypes, I'm really referring to epithelial mesenchymal transition, which is the sort of molecular process that cells undergo to become more kind of like their progeny cells. Like they kind of de-differentiate to go back into more mobile cells so that they can travel throughout the body and then kind of...
Right, which yeah, we don't want.
We don't want, exactly.
We want to stop that.
We want to stop that, yes.
So these receptors are really important because they're the ones that are saying, yes, go for it, or
yes,
no, don't.
Exactly, yeah.
All right.
That's perfect. You explained it better than I could. And so, yeah, and to kind of complement that, we're looking at, or the cannabinoid receptors are G-protein coupled receptors.
So what is a G-protein receptor?
Okay, that's an awesome question.
Because there's all these extra names.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a whole different, you know, group of receptors within your body. G-protein coupled receptors are a family of receptors.
Right.
The cannabinoid type 1 and cannabinoid type 2 are a type of G-protein coupled receptors because there's just so many different types, right?
And they all have different functions, I'm assuming.
Exactly, yeah. So it depends on like the molecule or the ligand that binds to the receptor. It has to be specific.
What's a ligand?
A ligand is, just think of it as like a chemical messenger or the molecule.
Oh,
like
okay.
Like cannabinoids, for example, when we work in the lab, we use, you know, solutions of, let's say, a CB1 agonist, which is just kind of a chemical ligand that is binds and works like the natural ligand would work on the receptor.
Okay.
I hope that was...
Yes, yeah. No, that's all good. Okay. See, we're getting there, aren't we? It's amazing we have to sort of rethink when someone says, which is so natural to you, yeah. just talk about these things, and then someone else goes, oh, hang on a minute, what does that mean? And then we have to think a little bit about, okay, let me see this. What's the equivalent to that yeah. in easier terms?
Or how I can explain it in a way where it kind of like simplifies the or yeah. clarifies the meaning of it.
Which... Because the main thing is not overcomplicating,
yes.
isn't it?
Yeah.
And this is not an easy thing to do when you're working, as we mentioned before, when you're working at the micro level.
Yeah, I
because
agree.
It all makes total sense to you. This is why, I mean, you mentioned before you even started, you know, pity we can't have visuals on the radio.
Yeah, that would help so much.
Because it
would
be so much easier to explain how the connections work along the way.
I agree, because like seeing a visual of, you know, what we like hypothesize the receptor mechanism is, would help, because I could just kind of like, you know,
draw it.
Like follow along. To
mind you,
how
the
it
one
would...
that you sent me was pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's it. That's the one. It looks very complex, but honestly, it's super simple. I mean, it probably is a lot more complex within your body, but just explaining it could be simple if there was a visual.
If there was a visual.
Yeah.
But you know what? We don't have that luxury, so we're going to have to keep on going.
Yeah.
So what else are you doing? Because I did interrupt you, I'm afraid, when I asked you these, you know, what these words meant.
So, yeah, so going kind of back to the G protein coupled receptors, which, as I mentioned, the cannabinoid type 1 and type 2, which I'm going to refer to as CB1 and CB2,
okay.
respectfully, they are a type of G protein coupled receptors. And recently, literature has kind of found that these G protein coupled receptors can have a biased agonism to them or functional selectivity. And so what I mean by that mm-hmm. is... think about it like this. The cannabinoid receptors, right, they can bind to multiple different... I'll focus on CB1 for now. They can bind to multiple different CB1 ligands or chemicals. And what research has shown is that depending on the chemical that binds to that receptor, it can cause sort of this differential response that results in a different cellular response as a whole.
Okay.
Right? And yep. so when we're doing our research with these different CB1 and CB2 cannabinoids, we kind of look to see, okay, so one has increased this metastatic marker and the other one not so much, but wait, that has increased, you know, a colocalization or some sort of
chemical reaction
yeah.
along the way.
Yeah, so it causes sort of like a different... cellular response. And
it's
super interesting, because then that way, you know, you've got to do a whole lot of more research to really understand and see which cannabinoids would specifically, you know, cause cancer metastasis or which would, you know, inhibit it.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of goes back to the whole question that you asked earlier about, you know, using cannabinoids still or cannabis still for, you know, relief or for therapeutic means. And, you know, more research is needed to figure out specifically which cannabinoid can bind and induce that cellular response that we want and that is good.
Because yeah. that's the problem. I mean, you see all these drugs that get advertised
yes.
on the telly.
Yeah.
And 45 seconds out of the minute is talking about all the things that could happen
yes.
to you.
Yes, yeah.
As opposed to, well, we told you to take this because it helps in this one area. But it could also have a side effects of this, this, and this. And I'm thinking...
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
I know.
And we're still putting it out there, but we could have all these side effects. And I know something can't be necessarily good for everybody, because as you said, everyone is different.
Yeah.
But I guess that's what you're doing here is,
yeah.
I mean, the ultimate aim for you, if I'm understanding correctly, is finding out how you can stop cancer progression
yeah.
by the use of cannabinoids.
Yes.
And maybe, luckily, if we can get it to the calming and less pain
yes.
part of it
yeah.
without causing other issues down the track
yes.
or down the line of, you know, what is happening.
Yeah.
So that's the nuts and bolts of it. Is
yes,
that correct?
Exactly that. And then just a very quick addition to that, making sure understanding that, you know, the cannabinoids that are currently used in treatment aren't, you know, aggravating the cancer that the
mm-hmm.
patients already have, because there is a very, very large gap in knowledge on cannabinoids, because recently in contemporary times, they have like just increased in use in recreational and clinical,
right.
but our awareness hasn't lined up to that.
Right.
So a lot more research is needed.
But then I guess the other thing is, as we know with the word cancer, I mean, not all cancers are the same, so they don't all behave the same
yes.
way. So the one that, you know, the experiments that you're doing, is it in relation to a very specific cancer, or is it hoping that it can be modeled for all cancers?
That's a fantastic question, because yeah, I agree. A lot of the times people think, oh, like, why isn't there a cure for cancer? But what they don't understand is there's such a large heterogeneity in cancer, mm-hmm. and different cancer types, and even within the same patient. Like, if a patient does have metastasis, the different tumors can have very, very different properties, right? And so what we're doing is we're kind of like starting off, you know, within a couple cancer lines. We have done the pancreatic cancer lines and colorectal cancer lines.
I know that one. Yeah.
I can't.
Colorectal. Yep.
Thank you. Yeah. And so that's what we're focusing on right now. But actually that's what we focused on with the CB1.
Right.
But for my project, I kind of wanted to expand on that. And I wanted to also look at breast cancer, but I wanted to also look at chemo-resistant pancreatic and triple negative, like, so chemo-resistant breast cancer cells. So right. Yeah, just to see if, like, you know, within pancreatic cancer cells by itself that aren't chemo-resistant, what effect does it have? And then if it is chemo-resistant, is that going to be even a greater aggravation? Because, you know, if you take just pancreatic cells by themselves and then the chemo-resistant pancreatic cells, you know, what can we expect to see?
What can you expect?
Yeah.
And I think that's a good point there, in terms of you're looking specifically at cannabinoids.
Yes.
But if a patient is also going to be having chemo or radiation and things like that, you know, so cannabinoids by itself may do this much to help.
Yeah.
But does it still do that much to help if someone's already had chemo and things, or the other way around?
Yeah.
You know, if they've had chemo, does actually having cannabinoids actually make it worse?
Yeah, exactly. Inside? Yeah. Because, you know, especially when it comes to understanding the body, it's just, again, I can't stress this enough, it's so complex. Like you mm-hmm. were saying, there's so many side effects that happen. And that's because, you know, one drug that is made, well, is intended to act on exactly, you know, the molecular component that it's supposed to act on. But it can also act on so many different
other
ones
things
that we don't want to. But, you know, they release it because they know that it's going to cause a greater benefit than harm. So yeah, it's definitely very complex.
Does it? Okay, I'm probably going too far ahead. You may not be able to answer this. Cannabinoids in general. I mean, yes, people have taken them in the past to help ease pain and things. We've seen results of that, and if there aren't proper results, the people themselves think it's working for them. Great. If it helps someone reduce pain, that's great. Do you think it's going to come to a time where they go, well, we should all be having this because you found out a thing that's going to stop this receptor? Now, I know you're talking about metastasis cancer,
yeah,
or cancer that's already, well, cancer's already there. What happens if the cancer isn't there yet? Would this product, cannabis, help stop it coming in the first place?
Yeah.
I mean, and that's another step, right?
Exactly. It's another step and another, you know, level or, you know, field that we have to also look into. But, like, so far, my research has kind of found out that, you know, cannabinoids do in fact cause cancer metastasis. So we're saying that they're not good.
Right, I forgot about that part. Yes, yeah.
Yeah,
so there's cancer cells there, but it's helping it spread.
Yes, exactly. Because what we do basically is when we have different experiments, and I'm not going to, again, get into the details mm-hmm. of it, but we have different experiments and we kind of, first of all, look to see, okay, so do these cannabinoids cause, you know, an increase in these different metastatic markers? And then if so, we want to better understand how they would do that. And we have looked at this molecular mechanism, which is the G protein coupled receptor that I was telling you about, and its functional selectivity. And specifically, this is a very, very long name, but so the receptor that, or the mechanism that we have, you know, found the cannabinoid receptors to work with is called the GPCR Nu1 MMP9 signaling paradigm.
And she did that without even reading it.
Well done. And yeah, it's not as complex as the name sounds, but I mean, if you saw a picture, you might think it was complex. Yeah. But yeah, it's a whole bunch of different cellular components that come together to essentially activate what is known as your nuclear factor Kappa B. And this is implicated in transcription regulation. And so we're saying that, you know, through this mechanism, the cannabinoids can then activate this NF-kappa B to lead to an increase in these metastatic phenotypes through rewiring your epigenetics.
Wouldn't the easiest thing to be is just not have cannabinoids if you've already got cancer?
Yeah.
From what you've just told me? I mean, because if they help spread and you don't know how to a point or how to stop it, then why give it in the first place?
So here's the thing.
Other than for peace of mind and calmness.
That's a fantastic question, because you are right. Like, if you look at the preliminary research or the results, you would say, oh, okay, so cannabis isn't good, so maybe we shouldn't, you know, give cannabis to cancer patients or for, you know, as a chemotherapy adjunct. But in reality, this research actually has a very significant clinical impact, because what we can do is, when we understand the different impact and molecular mechanism of these cannabinoids, we can then understand how we can modify it, or how we can, and especially with, you know, the technology that we have nowadays, and there's so many synthetic cannabinoids that are always, you know, being made, we can modify it or even bring in another sort of a chemical compound. I will actually speak about something in 1 second. Let me just finish this thought. Bring in another chemical compound to kind of alter it while still having, you know, those therapeutic effects of cannabinoids. So the simple answer is, I guess, yes, with the results, it would be easier. But of course, in research, I'm going to say this one more time, the complex answer is we need to better understand so that we can actually formulate a better clinical approach and a clinical treatment to patients with, you know, cancer.
That was very well said.
Thank you. And so, actually, to go back to the point I just wanted to mention, in the lab, we're also, over the summer, we've looked at different natural compounds and their role in this GPCR network that I was talking about. And so we looked at epinephrine, we looked at nicotine, we looked at caffeine, and another graduate student currently is looking at estrogen. And so the cool thing about this is we found that epinephrine and caffeine actually have anti-metastatic effects.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So obviously a lot more research is needed, because this is still very much in the preliminary steps.
Drinking my coffee every day is working for me.
Yeah, but no sugar, because we do have research that also shows that natural and artificial sweeteners can cause cancer.
Don't worry, I don't have sugar.
That's fantastic.
So good.
So yeah, with this GPCR that my professor is working with and the lab works with, it has a lot of different implications, because, again, GPCR is a family, right? It's like a category of receptors, and different ligands will bind to their specific receptors. Like, cannabinoids bind to their receptors. The epinephrine will bind to its receptor. But the major, you know, point of this is that we have found these cannabinoid or GPCR receptors, to heterodimerize, or in other words, I'll say interact with this other receptor called NMBR. You can look that up if you'd like. This is going to be really hard to explain. But yeah, and it causes this, you know, whole downstream cellular signaling that will then lead to the effects, right? And so we've explored different GPCRs and different ligands, like epinephrine, cannabinoid, sweeteners, caffeine, and we've saw, you know, different effects.
Varying effects.
Yeah.
Which is fascinating. Sorry, excuse me. One thing that I always find interesting, when we look at our human body, we should be putting natural products into our body, right? And you use the word several times, synthetic, which to me means being made in the lab. Is that actually good? Or because you haven't got some other things in there that perhaps we shouldn't have? Or should we always be looking at the natural?
These are great questions. So the first thing that comes to my mind right away is, I'm just going to speak like in general term to all the drugs and compounds that we do take. A very large majority of drugs are synthetic, but they are derivatives of plants and natural components or compounds that are found, you know, in nature. And so what they do is, like, they kind of alter it so that it, you know, specifically targets what we want to treat. So they kind of like tweak it so that it's more directed towards, you know, treating that specific illness.
So playing with the genetics.
Yeah, exactly. And so synthetics, like, this is a very debated topic, right? And I feel like we can go hours about this, talking about the good and the bad of using synthetics. I feel like as long as there is proper research done, and when I say proper, I really mean long-term as well.
Yep.
Because especially now with the increase and rise in, you know, the different drugs, the different accessibility to compounds that we don't really understand, it can have a long-term impact, not on us, but maybe on the next generation. Mm-hmm. And that we won't know, right? And at that point, maybe we kind of have, for a lack of a better word, screwed it for them, you know? And so it's a very...
That's the thing with research, right? You can't just put something on the market because it worked once.
Yeah.
You know, you're right. It has to be long-term. And even some of those long-term studies, you still may not get it right because it may not show up in 10 years as being bad. It may show up in 50 years' time.
Exactly.
So you do have to be careful, which is great that you are being careful to help us, which is why I'm sure they put all those... you could have these side effects.
Yeah, and you also have to kind of think about the benefits of it, right? Because these drugs, although they're synthetic, a lot of the times they do really increase the quality of life of the patient, or they do really treat the illness or the ailment. And with that, again, you know, they might treat the illness, but is it going to, and I'm going to bring epigenetic rewiring into this, because everything can rewire your epigenetics. Is it going to rewire your epigenetics so that it, you know, can harm future generations? Or maybe it's not going to have an effect and it's just helping you and that's it.
Which is great.
Yeah.
A lot to do in a short time for you. But I'm sure whatever you're working on, then the next person can take over that project and take it to the next step, which I would imagine as a researcher, you'd be thinking, well, can you keep me informed of what goes next? Because I was really sure that this was going to work. And if you didn't find it work, then why? Because I'd like to know why.
Yeah, I agree. And even I feel like if I have the opportunity to take this experiment with me because I plan to graduate this year. But if I have this opportunity to take it on and, you know, expand on it, then I definitely will. Because, you know, seeing it kind of start from the ground and growing just to better understand.
Well, I think that sums you up totally, actually, because I was looking at some of your extracurriculars. I mean, when you take something on, you take something on and you want to see it through. St. Mary's Drop-In Centre student volunteer, Rivera Community Living recreational volunteer, UNICEF Queens graphic coordinator, Queens Cardiac Research Committee, financial director.
Yeah.
I mean, you've taken on a lot of things here. None of them would be easy to do.
Yeah.
But you're clearly passionate about them and want to help.
Yeah, I definitely do. Like, because that's the thing, right? Like, you are a product of this world. And I believe that, you know, with my time here, I want to do something with it. And I want to, as much as I can, get involved with the community and just do anything
Make a difference.
Yeah, make a difference.
You want to make a difference. Yeah. And I think that's very admirable. And I know you're going to make a difference in everything
that you do. Thank you.
You will. So good luck with it all.
Thank you.
Good luck with your application for med school.
Thank you.
I'm sure that'll go well too for you.
If you're listening, med schools, please let me know. I'll be a fantastic physician.
She's a good one. She's a good one. She's a keeper. Yes. So, Rachel, it's been great chatting with you. Thanks for coming on the show. And like I said, good luck with everything. So that's it, everyone. Another week of Grad Chat sadly comes to an end. And don't forget, you can download the show tomorrow from either iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and CFRC Podcasts. Just type in a Grad Chat. Until next week, this is CJ the DJ signing off with a big hooray.
Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University, situated on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of the Faculty of Engineering and Applied Science.